stabilized and ready.
Didn't think anyone survived Bagassi, sir.
Spartans never died, George. They're just missing in action.
I read your file, Lieutenant. Even the parts Oni didn't want me to. I'm glad to have your skill set, but you can leave that lone wolf stuff behind.
This our new number six?
Affirmative.
You picked a hell of a day to join up.
And welcome back to Anger, Sadness, and Envy, the Rampancy.net podcast. I'm Narcogen, the webmaster of Bungie fansite, Rampancy.net. And I'm here with Miguel Chavez from Bungie Sightings and Blackstar from Blackstar Productions. Welcome back, guys. In this episode, we'll be talking about the upcoming public multiplayer beta of Halo Reach. We've just had a lot of revelations about Reach, specifically stuff about the arena mode and the loadouts. I mean, do you think they're going in the right direction with this? Are you looking forward to this?
Well, from what I saw of the actual footage, I didn't get a chance to really delve into any of the particular details as far as what actually each particular game type entails. But as far as the multiplayer stuff, I have not been following or even doing any of the Halo 3 multiplayer, so the advent or any modifications on anything coming up in Halo Reach hasn't really particularly sparked my interest at all. I'm far more interested in how the campaign is going to unfold and the interactions with that. And if any of the particular hindrances in the co-op modes will be either rectified or modified in such a way as to make gameplay a little bit more enjoyable and conducive of a shared joint experience more than anything. The multiplayer stuff, unfortunately, has degraded over the years ever since Halo 2 came out. If you look at my particular stats, I mean, I played over 6,500 games. When Halo 3 came out, I think that diminished down to less than 100. So, that ought to tell you exactly how far my interest in the multiplayer has gone down. Just based on my user experience, I far more enjoy campaign elements than anything that would come up in multiplayer. I think the advent of some of the other technologies to it could potentially complicate things even more. Their modification of equipment, obviously, you know, they've seen how it played out in Halo 3 multiplayer, and I don't think they were quite satisfied with it. So instead of going with the traditional versions, they've gone off to the new styles of having armor abilities, which are, I see timed bonus extras, the running faster, the using of jetpacks and other things. And it's an interesting dynamic in how they changed it, but as far as the implementation, without using it firsthand, I can't really comment on how well I think that's going to actually play out. I see a lot of interesting potential problems, especially with the jetpack aspect of it all. And not being a fan of any of the flying game types and any of the multiplayer first-person shooter game types out there, like, you know, Unreal Tournament, I was never a fan of the big flying levels or anything with people, you know, jumping around thousands of feet in the air. I was much more of a ground pounder and enjoyment game type where, you know, people actually keep their feet down. Hell, I hated when people were jumping too high. So suddenly having them flying around in the air like butterflies just, you know, doesn't quite appeal to me personally. As far as the particular game types, I have to try them out first because, I mean, some of the more fun ones that I had in the Halo 2 ones, nobody liked. I mean, I happen to like the Territories game type. I thought that was kind of interesting. You had to implement some tactics and use some actual teamwork. Nobody wanted to play it. Everybody wants to play Slayer. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, it looks like what the invasion type might be something kind of interesting than something sort of objective based. Maybe I was thinking of something like the old Unreal Tournament assault mode, right? Something asymmetrical. and territorial, but not like domination where you control points, but where you have to kind of advance, you know, from one point to another point while the other team is trying to defend.
We haven't actually seen fully laid out video of what, I mean, it's kind of been teased, right? We don't actually know what the mechanics are yet.
No, they only they did that, you know, that quick video where they teased out, you know, loadouts and arena and invasion and you know, Spartans versus elites. Now that one's probably pretty self-explanatory, but I don't think they've detailed what invasion is. They did separately detail quite a bit about loadouts and arena. Blackstar, are you interested at all in the arena system? It looks like, you know, the whole ranking system is going to be completely different from now.
Mildly, it definitely, you know, piqued my interest as far as checking it out and seeing what it had to offer. I definitely noticed that some of the graphical elements of what they used on it had changed. The headhunters actually kind of sparked my interest. That was kind of like, whoa, what's this all about? As far as any of the multiplayer changes or whatnot, you know, seeing is one thing, playing is another. Yeah. I mean, I can remember all the excitement about some of the Halo 2 game types and how it's like, oh, wow, this is going to be awesome if... And then suddenly there was a caveat or some element that, you know, either it was slightly off kilter or you wished that they could implement and they couldn't, and suddenly it didn't work. Same way with Firefight. It's like, okay, yeah, this could have been really awesome if you could have either limited your risk or your time or experience or whatever, and you couldn't. Mm. And suddenly, whoa. Okay, Firefight looked awesome, and yet suddenly nobody with, you know, who wasn't sitting on the toilet or had a catheter installed, you know, suddenly had to bail on this in a couple of hours. So, yeah, it just
there needed to be ways to end Firefight matches.
All they had to do earlier is say, "Hey, we're going to do this for 5 levels, 10 levels, 15 levels. You pick what you want, or hey, have an unlimited. You know, for those who have 10 hours to kill and want to beat the high score that was set back in 1983 on friggin' asteroids, great. Go to it. Spend 3 days playing it. But, you know, for people who have lives and kids and jobs and things to do, sitting around and killing 4 or 5 hours at a stretch is...
Yeah, or just bladders, for that matter. I mean,
kidney stones alone, yeah, having to get up every 30 minutes and trying to play a four-hour game, forget it. So, yeah, it's just I wish that there were certain elements, and seeing the new stuff in Reach, it's like, okay, this has the potential of being fantastic, but now there's going to be something that's, you know, there's going to be a monkey throwing a wrench in somewhere, and the question is just where. So, and until I get to play it, I'm not getting my hopes up.
So that kind of brings up what we think about. I mean, I think we're going to the beta's coming in less than 20 days, I think.
For something earlier.
Yep.
Right. And so what do we think, what do we take at face value? Is Bungie going to actually listen to what we say? Is this more them doing their whole behind the scenes server stat gathering and kind of analyzing where people are going, or will they also be paying attention to like if, you know, if just like Blackstar is saying, there's some things in there that are just completely just annoying and that we know is going to fall back to, oh, no one's going to play this because everyone's going to go to Slayer. You know, like, will they pay attention to some of that? Or sometimes I think that, you know, there's not a lot of latitude for them to make not even sweeping changes, but even like minor kind of changes that I, you know, like if we said, well, the bullet spread is too wide, I don't know if they'd be willing to really tweak that, because then I think that cascades into campaign and
I'm not really sure that they should,
right.
I think they're much better off for purely mechanical things. They're much better off looking at the data that the engine gives them and seeing, okay, how do people behave, and what results do people get with what weapons and what areas, and looking at the heat maps, rather than, you know, looking at what a vocal minority says about this weapon ought to be like that. What there was a discussion on the HBO forum just this past week about the shotgun, right? The H3 shotgun is useless. The Halo 2 shotgun was even worse. Real shotguns can shoot 100 meters. They should make a realistic shotgun. And I was like, well, no, they should make a realistic. First, that's not realistic. And second, no, they shouldn't. Realism shouldn't really be the standard for this. You know, in a fantasy game about alien invasions, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, I think if they had, you know, the BR would have no spread, and
not to mention the rise on it, you'd be shooting in the air in 5 seconds, but you know, leaving that trigger pulled.
Yeah, the recoil. Yeah. I think there are some things where it's good for them to listen to someone saying, like, I think that would have been something where it would okay to listen to people who said, you know, firefight mode really ought to have a set ending. I think that's something, because that's purely a psychological thing. The server logs aren't necessarily going to tell you that. Well, that's a
bladder thing too.
People are gonna hang on to the game. The server log can't tell you whether somebody got up and left. I think games of firefight happens where there's three or four people playing. They're in the game. They don't want to drop out. So they'll leave the controller connected, but they've got to go do something else. And the server log can't tell you that. So there are certain things I think you do have to listen to what players actually say. But there are plenty of places where you shouldn't trust what players say, or you shouldn't trust that the segment of the population that feels motivated to speak up on a certain issue has got the view on that issue that is best for the broad majority of players. I think that's tough. I wanted to ask one thing about the season aspect of Arena, this idea that, you know, whatever ranking you're going to achieve, you're going to be part of this group or that group, and it lasts for a month, and then it resets, kind of like the old rolling reset on the leaderboards, right? Where, you know, they do it. Is that a good idea?
Brian, do you have a thought about that?
Well, I see potential problems for people, you know, getting paired up together that may not want to be. I think a lot of people are definitely very specific about who they want to play with, when they want to play, and how they want to play. And to suddenly have an automated system coming and saying, okay, we're going to pair up you guys together. I know on very, very rare occasions back in the Halo 2 experiences where you would get a random group that was really solid, that worked really well together. And to be honest, some of those were my favorite experiences with Halo 2, where you got a group of guys that you could talk to, that you could, you know, tell things to, get feedback from, and be told stuff that was useful, that was helpful in the game, and people worked together, and the teamwork clicked. And I hate to say it, though, but those moments were really, really rare. Now they're trying to add that element into a larger group of which they're now assigning. Ugh. I see a whole lot of potential issues with that.
We don't know, you know, how it's really going to play out until they launch it. But I think the way they've said it's supposed to work anyway is that they've decoupled, kind of like they tried to do in Halo 3 with the experience system, right? Where the experience system was something where you're always earning more points and always moving forward, and doing badly doesn't make you backslide. That you would achieve a rank, and once you've achieved that rank, you've met the requirements. You know, once you're a general, you'll always be a general, even if, you know, you don't play anymore and you suck. So that now they've just kind of come more completely divorcing the system that ranks you to figure out who you should play with and who you should play against from the system that, you know, awards you a rank or a rating of some kind. Because I think they've said that, you know, just because you're in Onyx and you have buddies that are in, you know, another rank, they're supposedly still going to let you play together. And behind the scenes, the true skill system that's figuring out, you know, if you're just going into a random matchmaking playlist, that it's going to work the same way, that it won't necessarily be taking people who are only from the group that you're in, but people who have the appropriate true skill ranking. And so some of those may be in that group, and some of them may not be. I don't know either. I'm I'm not so sure how that's going to play out. I'm interested to see how people react to the resets, because I've seen both reactions. I've seen people say, you know, that's a great idea. You know, people would get up to a level 50 and then they would lose their interest and they would not want to play anymore because, you know, there's not, you know, there's no way to go up. You can only go down. If you, you know, if you play, if you lose, you'll go down. And by making it reset, there's always something that you can play for. And then I've seen the other reaction where it's like, I'm not going to bother working to get a high ranking if it means that I can't hold on to it, that I, you know, that, that you know, next month I go back to being a zero.
People equate those things with bragging rights. They equate those level 50s, those ultra general martial rankings or whatever else as bragging rights. That's why people fake them. That's why people pay money for other people to play their characters to get them, because it's I want to, you know, my dick's bigger than your dick. You know, they want to show it off to everyone else as saying, you know, hey, I've achieved this wonderful goal. I'm better at this game than you and everybody else. And suddenly Bungie's going to say, oh, guess what? At the end of the month, you're back down to the bottom of the pile again. Yeah, those type of people are going to hate
that. I think that's great. Yeah. I think that's great because, yeah, it means there's never going to be an incentive anymore to buy an account that has a high ranking, you know, a high ranking player, because,
it's a good idea too. But at the same time, though, if you're going to do that, why have it at all? Why not have those numbers hidden? Why not have the ranking system and your leveling be a direct, you know, proportional element of how much experience points that you've accumulated with whatever formula that they use, and simply use that for assigning when you want to go online and play with random people? Why don't they keep that data hidden and as part of the system rather than being an element for people to use as bragging rights? And that way it doesn't have to be said at all.
I think that's where art meets commerce, and where they have to cater to those people who do, you know, if this is one of the first major AAA titles that launches that doesn't rank, I could see them saying, you know, people saying, listen, I'm just, you know, this game is incomplete. You know, it doesn't satisfy what I would expect from an FPS, especially an FPS with multiplayer. But I completely agree with you. I mean, I personally like that. I think this is going to make a dent in eBay with folks trying to sell, you know, their character. The only thing which will ruin that, if yes, it can do resets, but as long as Bungie is honest and really does forget the history of a particular character, because let's say that it does do resets, but there is some page you can reach where it says the history of your character, you've hit 50, you know, for a 1 3-month period back in 2010. And now it's 2011, that can still be considered some sort of bragging rights. That can still give a character sort of, you know, monetary value. Then you could say
they'll mail them little certificates of achievement. Congratulations, you've reached level 50, and they'll all sign and put their names on it. And they can hang it up on the wall to tell all their friends.
Right.
As I understand it, actually, it's not even going to have that many levels, you know, like 1 to 50. It's just going to be, you're part of this group, you're part of this elite group, but there's actually not going to be a leaderboard within the group, you know, so no one's going to know, you know, someone will be the highest ranking Halo, you know, Reach player out there, but they won't know who they are. And, you know, I think the most it would be able to say is that, yeah, you'll have a record of seasons, and it'll say, yeah, season one, you were in Onyx. Season two, you were in Onyx. You know, you might be right. Maybe a character with a long history of inclusion in that elite group will be worth something as well. If a player doesn't keep it up, then I don't know how it will display that either. Like, if you don't play for a whole month, that does, you know, what does it list you as? Does it list you as being in the lowest group? Does it say that you didn't play? I guess we won't know. We won't know until we see it.
That's the kind of stuff that I hope that Bungie pays attention to during the beta, is how folks start to kind of work the system, and that they pay attention to that and make adjustments accordingly. You know, regardless of us saying anything vocally, just them looking at what folks, you know, those people who did buy the ODST just to get into the beta and are ready and are, you know, chomping at the bit to try to figure out how to game it and how to get up there in levels and how they're trying to circumvent whatever things they put in place.
They want to pwn noobs.
Yeah.
I hope they keep the beta history, at least, because I played more games of the Halo 3 beta than I ever played of Halo 3.
Every time they change something in the beta, though, doesn't it negate that data that's been saved before? Because I think I remember in the beta before, there was something...
Well, the films definitely don't work.
Right, exactly. When something got broken because they made an adjustment or a change or an improvement. Right. So I wouldn't hope on that too much there, Narc.
Right. But, I mean, Halo 3 beta is the one where you could put where you could detonate the Jeeps with the sticky mines.
Yep.
You know, that's where we had that kind of fun.
The good old days.
You can't do that anymore?
I think it was just something where it was messy. I forget the exact rationale, but...
It was unintended
No, I think it was doing something to the engine. Like, it was not something... The explosions weren't supposed to occur in a moving vehicle in that way, I think. And so it would kind of mess up the animation or something. I really wasn't exactly clear.
Somebody forgot to carry the one somewhere.
Yeah. But it made for some good gameplay, though.
Yeah. Well, I remember the film, so they were hysterical. Yeah. You get a triple kill after you died. It was awesome.
Right.
For me, I think I kind of like the idea of the rolling resets. Just because, you know, if you come in after a long break of playing, or if you just come into a game late, I think it's kind of hard to look up and say, you know, okay, I bought this game 6 months late. I'm ranked one, and there's already people out there that they know all the maps and they're much higher ranked. And if you're interested in the competitive side of it, I think it's easy to get discouraged. Although I think for me the biggest thing is map knowledge. I mean, because there are, you know, when you fall out of it, I know the maps that are in the beta pretty well, but some of the new maps actually I've never actually played a matchmaking.
Well, that's because you didn't want to pay $60 for it when it came out.
Yeah,
you wanted to pay $20.
No, I did actually. I bought them all. I bought them all right when they came out, but I still didn't call them. Like,
man, you loser.
And then I bought ODST anyway. You know,
so. I just think someone's going to find a way to abuse it. I have no idea how yet, but somebody will.
Oh, sure. They'll find a way to abuse anything.
So why have it at all?
But, I think because enough people want it. I think it's for some people, it's why they buy the game, is to get some kind of bragging rights of some sort. And, you know, even if I don't feel that I want to be a part of that, because that doesn't drive me to play the game, you know, I don't necessarily think that Bungie should prevent people from having that or take it away from them. But if they make a few changes that make that system more accurate, you know, by taking away the incentive to steal accounts or to sell accounts or do that kind of stuff, then I think that's positive. And if it also helps the people that I know that were kind of frustrated by the way the ranking system works. Like, I know there are people who just felt that, you know, the way the system worked is True Skill ranks you according to how well you perform until you reach a level where you're being matched against people of equal ability. And that means you will win as often as you lose, and it means that your ranking no longer changes.
And you're stuck.
And and people would say, well, that's awful.
But actually, it makes the most perfect sense at all.
But of course. I said, but that's working as designed. That is designed to do exactly that. I said, you people, that's what leads to de-leveling, right? People intentionally play badly so that their rank can drop, so they can return to playing people who are worse than them.
They can start winning. They can start winning again, but then they're right back to where they were before. Right.
Right. Now, I'm not sure how much the reset idea is really going to fix that. Obviously, they can return to moving up in rank.
Well, don't you figure that on the day of the reset is when folks are going to jump on
or they're going to try to mess with
people.
Well,
no, because maybe, but from what I understand, though, because they're disconnecting the new ranking system from True Skill, they're going to let TrueSkill reset itself. Well, not reset itself, but they're going to let TrueSkill adjust your rank more quickly than it used to, you know? So if you jump in the first day and everybody is a one and you get matched up with another bunch of ones and they're all true ones and you're a guy who had a 50 in Halo 2 or Halo 3, you're going to completely own them. It's not going to jump you from one to two. It's going to give you a really big jump and then see how you do and then correct. So it's not going to take, you know, weeks or days or weeks or months to get a true skill ranking of 50 if you're that good. It's going to give it to you pretty quick. So although you'll be advancing in rank by winning, you're going to more quickly reach the area where you're winning as half the time as you're losing.
Yeah, but one of the issues of the ranking system, which has always been terribly annoying, was in Halo 2 they had it segregated by game type. And my question on the next one is that are they just going to do it as more of a total user experience for all game types and even the campaign to an extent, or are they going to keep that segregation? I don't play a lot of Halo 3 multiplayer, so I don't know how they have it set up or have it segregated. But they had this in Halo 2, I remember they had the experience points segregated by game type. So you had one group of people that were all Slayer whores that were level 50. Then you had them play, you know, like, you know, 10 or 15 games in big multiplayer. They jump in that and they're a level 4, but suddenly they're playing a whole bunch of 4s and yet, oh, they're a level 50 in Slayer. So they are an experienced player. And that lower number is not a representation of their actual Halo experience. It's only representative of what their particular, how many games of a particular type they've played. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing with the ranking and the new system, to be honest, the only way that I can even imagine them making it right is to have that kind of data hidden. Because if the whole point of it is to simply connect other players of similar skill levels to give everyone an average or a basic chance of winning, rather than simply getting their butts kicked every time, none of that data needs to be available to the player. That way, they won't have to think about leveling up or leveling down because they have no idea what level they're at. And nobody can complain about playing 50s against 1s or 1s against 50s because nobody knows that there are a 1 or a 50. Mm-hmm. And if the system is segregated by game type, that means that they're taking into account all the game experience they've had in every game type. And therefore, it's an actual quantifiable number rather than just a segregated, you know, slice of the pie. So,
as I understand it, some part of TrueSkill is going to be looking at not just how you do at a game type or a playlist, but overall, and that they are going to be hiding all of the TrueSkill numbers. But you're right. I think people will still find some way to try and abuse it. I mean, even if the numbers are hidden, you know, once you reach the point where you're losing as often as you win, I think people will know that, okay, now I'm playing against people who are the same rank as me. And they might still try to manipulate the system by intentionally losing games one way or the other until they see that start to change.
Or someone will super jump with a BXR and they'll be able to host everything and, you know, who knows?
Well, hopefully that kind of hopefully the glitching is done with. I mean, I think they did a pretty good job at controlling that kind of stuff when they moved from Halo 3.
Yeah, has anybody been hacked in Halo 3?
No, I don't know enough about the current scene to be able to answer that.
Well, I don't know. The technical advent of the third-party memory card stuff, I guess in the latest firmware update for the 360s, you can actually add on your own like USB drives and I think hard drives as well, up to like 128 gigs or something like that.
Yeah.
Is that with people being able to record their game saves on disks and externals that they can now remove and stuff, do you think that's going to be a forerunner to people attempting to even try to hack these things more?
Yeah, I think they're going to try. Right. I'm hoping that the game saves are encrypted real well.
Yeah, Microsoft must be feeling pretty confident in the way that data is being stored now in order to allow that. I got to admit, I'm a little bit puzzled that they've even done that. I mean, okay, they sell the memory modules And the memory modules are a lot smaller than flash drives you can buy, and they're a lot more expensive. But and people complain about that, and you know they're right to complain about that. At the same time, you know, just about every console game system that had any kind of removable memory has had the same problem. You know, they all use only their own types and connectors, and they're always kind of expensive, and people always complain about it. I'm not really sure that Microsoft had to do this or why they've done
it. The PS3 has always accepted standard USB drives. That's definitely been the thing, you know. And I think it's because, I mean, moving on from just this one game, but just in general with the Xbox, people are, you know, they're buying music, they're downloading movies, they need more readily available storage for this. You know, people are keep hitting. I think that they've just released a new drive, you know, official Xbox drive. But I think they want to just open that up and let other people, you know, just plug in anything, a 500 gig drive or whatever. And even though it limits you to 128, it's still something which you can just pick up for like $50, you know.
Well, I never understood why they charge so much for their external anyway. I mean, if you crack that puppy open, I mean, you know exactly what it is. It's a laptop drive. Mm-hmm. And laptop drive prices have been steadily dropping for bloody ever. So, I mean, you can get a terabyte drive for your laptop now. I think Western Digital and I think Seagate is either a 750 or a 1 terabyte. And they're pretty cheap. I mean, they're under, what, $250 or something like that? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if anybody really wanted to, there's no reason why they couldn't simply swap those things out themselves, or Microsoft couldn't offer a greater range of capacities at lower or near the same prices. I mean, that little plastic case that thing goes to can't cost that much to manufacture and assemble. I can't imagine it actually costs 2 to 3 times more what a regular drive is that has twice the capacity. I just can't fathom that. That's just money grubbing right there.
Yeah, that's just them. That's just accessory pricing. I think the same could be said for the controllers. The volume which they make them at, they don't have to cost $50.
No. Oh, please. That's insane for the controllers now.
But it's just one of those things where that's where they can get you for the money. So, and people buy it, so they keep going. You know, so there's. But so this USB change, I think, is a very welcome thing. I guess they're just, you know, they're understanding that they can't keep fighting that. I think if they hadn't done that, it would have impeded the growth of the platform with all the connections it's doing now. You know,
I agree. I just wish we could find a more elegant solution. I would like to be able to just plug in my own large drive in the receptor that they've designed for it.
Oh, right.
Have it, you know, USB externals and you know, I have to buy other media and whatever that is also, you know, it is bigger, but again, it's limited by a certain capacity, and I can only have the other drives that they offer attached to the side. That's silly, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think maybe they assume that most people don't want to crack open that, you know, add-on.
They could have designed it so you easily slid the thing in like a tray, or they could have made it to you know, have an internal slide bay that all you had to do was pop it in just like you would a regular card. You know, there are a million ways they could have done it.
Oh, well, I think the problem with that is that I don't think they ever thought from the beginning that they wouldn't be able to keep the system closed. I don't think they, you know, I'm sure that the guys when they designed the dock, you know, the drive sled thing, didn't ever think that Microsoft would ever allow anybody to upgrade that or to use their own USBs. I was kind of surprised at the way they implemented it, because I haven't used it yet. I'm actually looking around to see what I've got for USB, you know, enclosures to see if there's a drive I can put in and use there. But I was surprised that what they didn't do was make you format, the volume itself and fully dedicate it to the Xbox and keep the format proprietary. You know, the way the internal Xbox hard drive is. No, actually, it's not. It creates a folder and puts an encrypted file in the folder. So you don't even have to use the whole drive. You can just put stuff, whatever, in there, and you can mix so you've got your own files on the flash, and then you've got these it's just called like data one, data two, data three, Xbox files. I would have thought that, like you said, that's going to be a vector for, you know, for hacking. People are going to put save games on the flash drive, and then they don't have to jump through all these hoops to get the files onto their computer before they start figuring out how to break into them. That's what it sounds like to me. They must feel pretty confident that either that it's going to be hard to do, or just that most people won't be interested in doing it.
It only takes one.
True, but I think it's just that the people who are going to do that kind of stuff are going to do it whether they protect themselves or not, and that, you know, the rest of people are just going to buy games.
Well, How long can it take for the iPad to get broken?
Right. But I'm going to assume also that the other threat is that if you do it, if someone does do, you know, just like with the existing Xbox 360, the scenario, if you're caught, you're locked out. You know, that'll be your punishment if you actually try to do that kind of stuff. You know, so maybe that'll also curtail any kind of the shenanigans.
Actually, maybe there might even be other problems with that, because right now you can have your console banned for a number of things, including like modified contents of your your hard drive, right? If you've transferred a game from a CD and then you've hacked that game, if you've modified a saved game to give yourself, you know, ammo and stuff like that. Now you've conceivably got files on a flash drive that, when they're connected to your console, might be considered by the console as your internal hard drive. So now what? If somebody else modifies, say somebody gives you a flash drive, it says, here's my save games, and you connect it to your console.
I just want to put in quieter fans, for Christ's sake. I mean, geez. They got people banning you for doing that now. It's like, you know, what the heck? What advantage is it to have a hotter system that's louder? You know, what advantage it is for pwning noobs for me to have a quieter system?
I don't know. I'm surprised that they haven't tried to come out with a revised case design, that they haven't come out with a slimmer version. Maybe they're just too afraid of overheating.
Don't you figure that they have another model lining up? I mean, it has been quite a few years.
Well, there are rumors, but...
Well, I don't know. The PS3 came out a year after, and they already have a revised form factor.
I just want a quiet form factor. There's so much to ask. It doesn't have to sound like a bloody wind tunnel.
So what else is there? Do we want to wrap up ODST and just give it a tied up in a bow, or are we done with everything here? Or
yeah, everybody wants to talk about Reach.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're doing this. We want to get ODST done with, because we know that once the Reach beta is out,
no one's gonna care.
No one's gonna pay too much attention ODST to Reach. I guess. Maybe my final thought isn't so much about like whether they should have done it or not done it, or whether it should have been priced at, you know, at $60 or $30. I guess I just think it's a kind of a shame that it was done as late as it was. That basically, since they did the first Halo game and up until they left the embrace of Microsoft, that they basically were stuck in this whole studio works on one big title. They, you know, at several times it appeared they had other stuff they were working on, but none of that stuff has seen the light of day. They've pretty much been working on Halo games straight through the whole time. The idea of taking a small team and using existing technology to deliver a fair amount of content in a short amount of time, I just think it's a shame that, you know, by the time they got around to doing that, they were already leaving the Halo, you know, the Halo franchise behind, because it's an idea I could have really warmed up to pretty easily, having shorter games more often.
Here's an idea. Hindsight being 20/20, they probably should have given the fans what they wanted to back in the day which was Halo 1.5. They should have come out with a little add-on that was like ODST of like 4 or 5 levels to experiment and to try stuff before the new big title came out. So you got Halo 1, everybody goes gaga, everybody complains, I like this, I like that, I don't like this, I don't like that. Come out with a smaller team, smaller content, mid-range Halo 1.5, where they try stuff. Then they learn from that. You know, think of it as like a beta. Think of it as a test bed for what we're going to try next. Then you come out with the next big title, Halo 2. Yay, everybody loves it, everybody hates it. What do we want to change? What do we want to keep? Then you got Halo 2.5, and so on and so on. I look as ODST as Halo 3.5. It was a little thank you to the fans. It's, hey, let's try a little something new, and kind of like a wrap-up of a side story and a little experimentation thrown in. That's how I see it. That's how it came off. And I loved it. I enjoyed it. And you know, money aside, didn't have a problem with it. I just wish that
I have
it had
to,
other examples as well with other titles that they had done, because now we're at the end of it where Reach is going to be the last one and there isn't going to be a Halo 4.5, you know, if Reach is Halo 4. So,
well, not exactly. By Bungie.
And
anyway,
I think the not by Bungie is the big part. And the real question is Microsoft and whoever else that they get to do to make this thing going to be able to do as good, and dare I say even the remote possibility of them doing even better? So,
yeah, I would, you know, it's funny, because I was going to say, I think Black Star's encapsulated pretty much exactly how I was feeling about it. But I was coming at it from a different angle. Now, you know, just like he's saying, 2020, you know, hindsight, if you had your druthers, would you rearrange how these games came out? And I sometimes wonder if ODST had come out, I mean, obviously chronologically in terms of the storyline, if it had come out in between Halo 2 and Halo 3, it would have been, I think, much better received.
Yeah,
because it would have been like, you know, we're working on Halo 3, but here's something to tide you over.
Exactly.
And that it feeds into, you know, obviously if you saw Truth at the end there, and then you start up with Halo 3, and then we see what why Truth was there. I mean, that would kind of mm-hmm. give away what was going yep. on, but it still would have been a bit of a nice connecting thing there between the two games. And just like Blackstar is saying, they would have been able to feed off of the feedback from the users as to what they thought about Firefight, what they thought about the heads up a display, you know, the new weapons and so on and so forth. And maybe
they would have had a big heads up.
Yeah. It would have been an interesting way to tweak our experiences in there. And so then, you know, and then what would 3.5 have been? It would have been a different game altogether. Mm-hmm. You know, something.
I think for that to have worked, you'd have to go back and redo Halo 2 as well. Because all I can think of is that I think there would have been an awful lot of rage if, you know, given that even though it is a very good game in many ways, there was a lot of disappointment. I mean, you kind of finish Halo 2, and it's like,
so you're talking about with the chief saying, you know, let's finish this fight or whatever.
Yeah. So, if what you're saying is what you wanted to have do was that having just finished Halo 2, and now waiting, A, for the continuation, and B, for the, you know, for the redemption, you know, the idea that, okay, we didn't get in the end of the game that we wanted, and we're going to put everything that should have been in that, plus what was going to be in the next game, and package it in Halo 3. But then somewhere in that interregnum, they come out with ODST, a game which doesn't connect to that story in any solid way, doesn't feature those characters, and doesn't advance the plot. I think most people just would have said, I want to know what happens next. I want to play the big battle I was supposed to get at the end of Halo 2, but didn't. And here you go and spend time making this thing instead. I'm not sure ODST would have been better received in that environment. I think it might
well,
even
I'm just,
have been worse.
I'm obviously allowing for changes in the actual storyline And I'm also, of course, assuming that Bungie would have been forthcoming in the marketing of it. You know, like we need, you know, we hear you, the fans. You know, we know we hear your disappointment. We're going to need 3 years to give you, you know, what Halo 3 should be. In the meantime, though, you don't have to wait through. I mean, this kind of goes back to the subscription model, which you were talking about.
Yeah, you know, the more often aspect.
Yeah. So now, you know, yes, we have something big planned, but now, you know, on us, actually, now the more I think about this, imagine if each of these levels in ODST was a DLC.
Yeah.
You know,
that would have been great.
Yeah. So now that's the linkage with these beacons that we've been hammering on. Now you kind of leave it alone because you're like, okay, I understand. Now there's got to be a thematic thing tying it. Think of Halo Waypoint, which is just, you know, I understand what they're trying to do, but it's really just basically a marketing portal. But now imagine if Mombasa was the common downloadable area on your Xbox 360, and as you add more levels over the months as they create it.
They open up.
See, and that now, and then, like I said, obviously hindsight 2020, they couldn't have thought of that, you know, two, three years ago. But
maybe they did. You know, I mean, you notice that on that map, there's doors that you can open, and there are doors that you can't. And some of those doors open up later, and some of them never do. I mean, they might very well have designed that space with that idea that, you know, maybe at some point they would be a downloadable that would open up another, another door. That's the way Mass Effect 2 does it, basically, right? You've got the star map, and, you know, they just plop in a new system on that map, and there's, you know, a new mission and a new location and new characters all in that area.
I'm glad you didn't say Gears of War.
Well, Gears of War doesn't have that. Their only DLC seems to be multiplayer maps, and that's pretty much it. I don't think they've ever I don't think Epic has ever done any campaign DLC. And
that's
for
why
Gears,
they suck.
They
totally
that's how it works in Fallout. So the only other game that I played other than Halo for any extended stretch of time. So it does that too. It's got a huge map, and all of a sudden, you know, you buy some DLC and a new section of the map appears. So,
yeah. Have you played all of those DLCs?
Yes. Because I bought the one that contained everything, all the DLC, all in one shot.
Oh, okay. They made a downloadable version. You could download the whole game plus all the DLC.
We actually just bought like the legendary like edition. So it's a disc with actually two discs with everything included.
Did it come with a helmet?
No helmet.
But it comes with a cat.
There you go.
So,
is it alive?
I actually just bought some of it because they put a couple of those pieces of DLC on sale. So what, the Mothership Zeta I bought just recently, and what was the other one? Point Lookout, the one that's on the island where you go, on the boat to the island.
It's good. It's good gameplay.
And those are pretty good.
My only attempt at getting into like these RPG kind of things, and I actually enjoy it. It's not. It doesn't bore me as much as some of the earlier games did.
Like here's Fate, my question, Mig.
Yes,
do
sir.
You feel that you've gotten your money's worth out of this particular download content distribution system that they've had with the multi-disc stuff, or would it be less advantageous if you had to download it periodically, or do you feel that you paid too much or too little, or what was your impression of that? Similar to what design elements and ideas that they had about doing something similar with ODST.
Well, there's always been two bugaboos about DLC. One is when we find out that DLC
was already in there,
you're buying is the little 10K file that unlocks it. And then And then the other one is when you do have the DLC, but it's not really yours. Like if you lose, if you move to another drive or something, you know, you're kind of dependent on it sitting on a drive forever and ever in order for you to actually use it. You know, if you happen, if the drive happens to die, then you have to, you know, whatever, you have to call Xbox and, I mean, Microsoft and say, you know, that you need this again, you already purchased it, but it's, you know, the drive died or et cetera. So, you know, barring those, I mean, I'm wondering what's going to happen now with the USB setup, if that's part of that's going to take care of that. So you can kind of hold on to, you know, like you dedicate 128 gig drive for all your DLC that you first plug in when you purchase something, then you set it aside and then you download it one more time. And then
no, well, I can tell you that it's, I think if you can change one of the elements in the system without bothering it too much, but basically I have, like right here, I have two consoles and one of them's broken. But when I had both of them working and they each had hard drives, you can move a hard drive from one console to the other console. But then if you're not logged into Live and you're not on the same console plus hard drive combination that was in use when you downloaded the content.
Right. No, I'm aware of how it works now with the sleds, but I was hoping that maybe it being external, you know, this is kind of a new thing. This is a new update. I was hoping they would tweak that system where
I think it's the same for memory units, and I'm betting that they're just treating the flash drives, any external, like an MU. So I think it's, unfortunately, it'll probably end up
because I figured that up until now, people weren't using the MUs to actually dump DLCs because the DLCs usually wouldn't fit. It's too small.
So
you would.
Yeah. It's just for game right. saves
so
and the, profiles.
So you would assume that one of the first things when Microsoft is testing this is that people are going to want to, you know, I mean, some of those downloads are like 200 megs or, you know, maybe even like approaching like a gig sometimes, or like even think about even like demos, you know, you want to be able to keep those demos. And so I'm hoping someone there had enough sense to see that and have something in place to either warn you that it's not going to work that way or that it will adjust itself and allow you to do that, you know, that it'll unlock it so that it knows that it's tied, you know, it doesn't have to be something where, you know, if you're not logged in, then you're locked out.
Yeah. I'll have to try that. I do know that they've obviously put some limitations on that I think that are a little bit too restrictive. Like for instance, just the new feature, it's not new anymore, but the feature where you can copy the content from the discs to the drive so that you don't have to, wait for it to load. It's really useful on, you know, now that they're bumping up against the limit, we've gone back to multi-disc games, right? So, Mass Effect 2 is two discs. And they're not up front of it. Maybe it's in the manual, but, you can actually load both discs on, and that way you don't ever get asked change discs. Yeah. But of course you still have to have one of the discs in the drive. Because, you know, so it knows that you own the game, that you haven't just borrowed somebody's hard drive. And again, you can have this problem where, you know, if on the same console, if you load the discs onto a hard drive and then you put that hard drive attached to a second console, even if you're logged into Xbox Live into the same profile using the same hard drive and you have the disc in the drive, it will still tell you that you have to that you cannot play this game from the hard drive. You have to because it was put on a different console. You have to delete it and reinstall it from the discs.
That's ugh.
And that's obnoxious and unnecessary because you have to have a disc in the drive to play the game anyway. So they know you're on the same profile. They know you're on the same hard drive. They know you have a legitimate game disc. I guess they're just so paranoid about what people would do with files on the hard drive that if anything is different, forget they're like, no, start over.
Is there anything implemented going back right now?
I was just going to go back to your question, Blackstar, that I like it, you know, the DLC. I would not have a problem with it. It was just those two things that would kind of bug me about it. But I would not have had a problem if it was if going back to our original example, if ODST was done as like a DLC or even going to these other games with their DLC. I love it. I love that there's this ability for us to get, you know, gigantic amounts of data of a new game, you know, basically.
It makes me think that if the future business models after, you know, Halo and Reach, you know, ends up falling into Microsoft's laps and out of Bungie's, is whether or not they'll take up the banner of that. And we will be seeing, you know, Reach Point 1, Reach Point 2, Reach Point 3, where we'll actually get expansion elements of that. The other question that I had is there any implementation right now of being able to back up your existing hard drive to prevent failure, and will this USB option for other media be able to handle that?
Yeah, there is no backup.
There's okay, no so backup. That I don't like at
yeah,
all.
No. Yeah, no. You can, I think you can go into the file management and you could manually right. copy, you know, everything
but,
that's in there.
But doesn't it erase the original?
For most stuff, there's
I think it moves it. Yeah.
But I think for some content, there's an option to move, and for some, there's an option to move or copy, right. but not
I
for
just,
everything.
I just went through this with, like in the last 6 months or so when we upgraded hard drives, and I had to call the Microsoft, and basically, for whatever reason, when one of the Xboxes came back repaired, they had never flagged it as the licenses having been moved. So I had to go back and tell them that that they had never switched the MAC address of the Xbox console to my particular profile. So as far as it was concerned, I was always playing off of a stranger's console, Yeah. And so when we finally upgraded the hard drive, because we always had like the smaller one, when we went up to what I think it's a 60 gig drive. I found that I couldn't play. There was nothing for me to, even though it had moved. So I had to basically I had to tell them to unlock it, and then I had to re-download every single game. But it doesn't actually re-download. It just simply compares against what's on the hard drive. If I've already re-downloaded it, it just simply flicks a file somewhere and says, okay, you still have the data, and we're just going to now assign it to you. You now like own it. And that was really crazy. But I was like, you know, what would happen if I had, you know, if my Xbox, I guess it would have to be both things, both the hard drive dies and the Xbox dies. And, you know, there's no way to back it up.
Yeah. What? And they've got this license transfer tool now, right? Where you supposedly can automate that, but they only let you do it once a year or something. And I know that, I think the console I'm using now is still not listed as the primary console, because if I go into Marketplace through the Xbox site and I say I want to buy this content, and they say, okay, next time your Xbox starts up, it'll download. It doesn't download. And then if I manually go in on the Xbox, it'll show up in the download queue. And when I try to download, it will say this download is for another Xbox.
You know what
And it'll let me do
just,
it. But.
Just as a matter of information, you go to the section on the Xbox Live website for the license transfer, and it's so silly. It's a very typical Microsoft thing where they don't spell it out. You go as if you're going to initiate a license transfer, and that's where it will list what is under your name, how many different consoles you've owned, and which.
You
can't do that, but that's where you can get that information and then call them and say, listen, this is wrong. It'll say this is your primary one, and then you compare it to what's in the back of your Xbox, and then you say, okay, this is wrong. And you can then call them and say, listen, I need this changed. But they don't give you like a status or like a check page. They just simply assume you already know the what you're doing. And that took me a while for me to find that, but But, you know, I have to say, once you go to them with clear instructions as to what's going on, they then take care of you. And I was able to re-download the Halo 3 beta.
Yeah, I finally deleted mine. I don't know that I'll bother to re-download it, but I did see some posts about, yeah, you can still get to that because people are still authorized for it. I guess anybody can download it.
I suppose,
it now,
yeah.
Right? Although
no, it won't,
it
do
won't
nothing.
Open. Won't do nothing. But the Reach beta will, and the Reach beta will be out for everybody in less than a month.
So should we meet again in a month after playing some beta?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have
Blackstar. Are you
up
for that?
I'm all for it. Personally, I'd love to actually get it on like an SSD or something where you can actually get improved load and performance times. I wouldn't mind spending, you know, a pretty penny on, you know, like a 30 gig SSD just to get that.
It'll put everybody out of sync, probably.
Right. I think what we should try to do now that we got this Skype thing set up is we should play a game in the beta where with all three of us plus friends, of course,
in real time. That'd be nice.
In real time, that'd be kind of interesting.
We'll see if we can't try that. By the way, is anybody going to be playing any Halo 2? What we have four as we're recording this, it's just a few days before Halo 2 is being multiplayer
being
shut
off
forever.
I'm maybe I'll finally play some of those maps made by the
Certain Affinity.
That's it, yeah. But I think I played it maybe once, and that was it.
Yeah, what they did, the remake of Hang 'em High.
Oh, the one where they made it all brown?
Yeah. Ooh. And one or two others, no? It wasn't just that one map.
Yeah, no, it wasn't just that.
They did one in Gunmetal Gray and Dystopia Brown.
But yeah, I think I'm going to give it a shot. I don't think I've ever, I have to be honest, I don't think I've ever played Halo 2 on this 360, which I have. I don't think I've...
Me neither.
I'm going to assume that they worked out all the glitches and all that stuff, right?
I've played campaign Halo 2 on it. I have not played, I don't think I've
actually
played any multiplayer.
Scratch Halo, that. Halo we actually played, Meg, I think actually you were there. And this was actually just before... It was just after Halo 2. It was just before the Halo 3 bit where they actually came to do the taping. And we were at a LAN at your house, remember?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Do you remember?
We were playing some. Did we find some glitches? Was that what we had?
What's the map in Halo 2 that's the circular one
in the swamp with
all the fog?
Oh, yeah, the one they removed.
Yes. What's that one?
Yeah, I forget that one.
That one,
but I know what you mean.
Yeah, 360 to its knees because of what they used to create the fog.
Right. So I just remember there was some other one. I think it was Lockout or one of those maps where if you held the pistol a certain way and you walked up to one of the walls, it would disappear. And it was only on the 360. It wasn't on the original Xbox, and so we figured it was just some sort of visual graphical glitch, you know, some pixel wasn't mapping to another pixel correctly.
Yeah, there was also a persistence of a frame in Lockout.
Oh, that's it. That's right, the persistence of a frame, right. You would look up and then you would see the sky, which kind of follow you along like a ghost image.
Yep, it was freaky. So,
but
yeah,
I'm going to assume that after their whatever updates that they hammered those out, so... Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm actually can the original Xbox still log in to Xbox Live?
My understanding is that yes, it can.
I have one box here somewhere that I could probably connect and try to have
it. But I think after this they're shutting it off. I think they're not just shutting off Halo 2. I think they're pretty much shutting off Xbox Live for original Xboxes.
So wait a minute, how would you set that up though? I mean, wouldn't you have to like transfer your account from one Xbox to the other first?
I think that's what, because if I remember correctly, when I went from the Xbox to the 360,
yeah, you had to do that.
It basically said, okay, now your profile is a 360 profile.
Right. Exactly. Will it let you go back?
I don't think you have to. I think you just connect. I've got one. I should just yeah, you should hook try it up and it. See
well, I'm,
what
I'm
happens.
Screwed anyway because all three of my Xboxes all got Xbox Media Center on them. So,
are you enjoying that? The Media Center working out great for you?
I'm loving it. In fact, I got it on three Mac Minis in the house, MacBook.
But what about the Xbox, though? Three Xboxes you have running on. See, I'm going to probably do that with this one once it's dead. So, rather locked out of Xbox Live, I'll probably just do that.
All right. So I guess we've wrapped up. Maybe if we have a chance to try and get in some Halo 2, maybe we could do a little mini. A mini cast about that. See, like recollections of, hey, what is it like playing Halo 2?
Yeah, we could record the footage too.
You know how many people are going to be? I bet you are going to be a ton of YouTubes of folks waiting for that. Kind of just like when
trying to play the beta.
Seeing like when the last game is before the Switch gets flipped. Because I remember that happened with Myth. Folks were hanging on there. Everyone, that was back when you could chat, obviously. So you could actually visually videotape that.
And people I remember I used to do that. I used to type in all caps.
Right.
Used to drive Mark crazy.
I wonder if that will still happen. Although I guess that the way that Halo works, you could be sitting in a lobby, and the system could be dead behind you, and you won't know until you quit back. Yeah, and until you quit and go back over to the lobby. So no one will probably really know what the last game is that played. So
maybe it may be also like the beta. Remember, because what the people who were in a game didn't get kicked out of the beta immediately. They stayed on for hours. It wasn't until later that they did something that made all.
Yeah, no, I remember when they were doing an update with Halo 2. This was actually like the final time, either before they reset scores or they had to implement a patch or something. And I can remember me and a bunch of friends of mine. We were actually playing up against these serious jerks, so we decided to grief them. It was that what was the map in Halo 2 that was the semi construction site with the big ramp in the middle, and we always used to play like assault on that, where you had to take the bomb up this building in the middle. That was the level we were at, and we ended up griefing them. Grabbed the skull and we grabbed the banshee, and we shot myself and like three other guys up on top of the building, way behind the main starting base for the defenders, and nobody could even get up there because we had the banshee and whatnot. And they were screaming and yelling and swearing and racial slurring for hours, but they didn't want to quit because they knew if they did, that was the last game they were going to be able to play. So the whole time, yeah, I think we went on for, God, I got to ask Crab. It was most of the night, you know, we were up there. And then finally Xbox, you know, they pulled the plug and we were laughing our heads off because I was the last guy. Everybody else finally had to bail. This building was behind. You remember this section of the defender's base? It was behind where you actually had these big tile area and this little like air conditioner or something you used to be able to hide behind.
Yeah, the fence.
Yep. It was over by that. And if you went straight up along the back, there was a building shelf that you could get on. And if you actually shoved people up through with the banshee, you could get up there and just stay there.
Yeah, I remember. This was the level you used to play.
Big Team Battle. We used to play Assault. We used to play CTF.
I used to play INS versus Mexicans.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember that.
That sounds interesting.
Remember that, Meg?
No. Well, maybe in real life I do. But
I'm pretty sure you... No, remember you'd play a game where the idea was for one team to advance from the start locations and jump off the edge into the water and suicide themselves. And you had to kill them before they could get there. That. It was like this kind of like fence defense thing. You know, the idea they're running.
Oh, my
running
God.
The
oh, yeah. No, I never played
we played that a lot.
It was pretty awful.
I also played Run. We used to play Run on COAG all the time. That was a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, and remember the idea always was to try and hit them at all, because even if you got like one hit on them before they suicided, it would count as a kill.
It didn't
for you.
Count.
So you had to get over the edge unscathed for it to count. But of course, it was another one of those honor game types, you know, like people had to play it right, otherwise it
would. Yeah, I can't imagine that working with any of the new systems they got coming up with the Reach people, which are all random.
Well, we're going to get to play this one last time, I guess. So I see it's got Warlock and I remember these maps. They were a lot of fun. Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Elongation is the one you're talking about with the ramps.
Elongation.
That was a remake of Longest.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yep, and plenty of maps in here I really, really hate. Colossus.
I liked Colossus. That was awesome for Colossus sniping, man. Great. That was friggin' the best.
But some good ones, too.
Yeah, Terminal. Turf. I liked Turf a lot.
Backwash was the one we were thinking of before. The active camo when the swamp.
Yeah, that messed up the 360 something big time. I actually remember talking to Jinx about it and was amazed that something that simple seemed to cause the awesome power of the 360's three-core thing just died right in front of you. I couldn't believe that. That was weird.
Says here in Halopedia that to this day, Backwash remains the only map to ever be removed from Halo 2 matchmaking.
Wow. So whose fault was that?
It says here it was removed from Halo 2 due to problems with the Xbox 360 loading the fog covering the map.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a question of awesome power. This is a question of two completely different GPU manufacturers. I mean, if you think about it, the Xbox 360 is actually emulating not only a different GPU, but a different GPU from a different vendor.
No excuses. Programming is ones and zeros. You just got to put them in the right order.
I think they needed more whatever. Ones. Okay, well, then let's wrap this up then. We've pretty much determined that ODST is a great game, was worth $60. Everybody should buy it.
Yes, it was better than Cats. I will play it again and again.
But at this point, you have to buy it to get to the beta. You know, that's why you got to buy
it. Exactly. Even if you don't like it. The beta this time is going to be something, I don't know. I mean,
it's the most hyped beta ever. So it's going to be very interesting. It's almost like it's going to be its own little game. Like, you know, the amount of people that are going to be on it, it's going to be a lot of people.
It's almost not a beta. It's almost just another product. I don't know. I just, for some reason, it's kind of strange. You know, when they did it for Halo 3, everybody said, "Oh, Crackdown." They're just, you know, they're giving you the Halo 3 beta because otherwise nobody would buy Crackdown. And then people were surprised, like, "Oh, wow, Crackdown's actually a good game." And it's kind of unfair that ODST doesn't get treated the same way. You know, that you know, people are like, "Oh, they're making you buy ODST so that you can get access to the beta." But you know, the people who liked ODST were going to buy it anyway. No one had the chance to be pleasantly surprised by ODST. I think if you were going to like it, you were going to buy it anyway. And if you bought it just for the beta, then you think you're being manipulated. Right. You can't help yourself.
You're addicted. Yes.
Exactly. Okay, so I guess between now and the next time we record, we'll try to play some Halo 2, and hopefully by that time the Reach beta will be out and we can say something about it.
I'll see you then. Take care.
Okay.
Later, people.